Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 32. On this episode, we talk Guardians of the Galaxy, directed by James Gunn. It is technically the 10th film in the new amazing Marvel Cinematic Universe. Just another notch in their belt, as we'll come to talk about. It stars Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper. The list goes on and on and on. And we talk about some of the casting choices and how they seem to be mostly brilliant, not to give anything away from the episode, but it was a ton of fun. It was a record-breaking box office weekend for August, deservedly so, which, I mean, I think is the consensus. It's scoring incredibly high with the critics and the fans, especially. It has a lot to kind of examine. We definitely talk about the similarities it has to some other movies that might contain outlaws banding together to save the galaxy, whatever that film might be, or whatever those films might be. And joining me to do it is JR, who has been a godsend this summer, continually being on the podcast, helping us break down these movies. You know JR from The Story Men, Origami Elephants. He has lots of stuff that he's doing, engaging culture. It's awesome. And our local comic guy, Griffin Kale, is again on the podcast to tell us all about the comic world. And we get into some really great conversations about how this film veers from the comics, how an unknown film can become this popular, the marketing behind it. Just a great, great conversation. So, thank you for joining us. And here it is, episode 33, Guardians of the Galaxy and Unlikely Heroes. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. Because I need feedback at all times, and I think it takes a kind of special, which is weird because I don't have a problem getting up in front of people, but I just don't want to be the person who says things and people are like, yes, that's it, or whatever. So I do conversations. So that's why this podcast is a conversation. So,
without further ado, welcome to the conversation.
Without further ado. But, you know, that's why I like to get people who are really smart and know lots more about these things than me. They can tell you what's this and what's that. So, it works a lot better that way. It's about knowing your strengths.
Yeah.
So the ones in person are pretty easy. I used to think that I had to give like this 15-minute homily after a movie or something, being like, this is what the themes are, this is what Jesus would say. And now I'm just like, hey, what was your favorite part? Why? Really? Why would you watch this movie again? And people were just like, because this person sacrificed themselves, and I really am down with this concept of, you know, sacrifice for others, or I'm really down with this concept of justice, and I'm just like, go with it. And nice. People were like, what?
So I love Morpheus.
Anyway. So they've gotten easier as I've kind of learned, just directed the conversation. But
that's fantastic. We're gonna have
one Friday, and it's gonna be awesome. We're gonna talk about Warm Bodies.
Oh, good one.
So, which is the exact noise I made, Griffin, when I first saw the movie, and then
Why can't we talk about Zombieland or something? Other fun zombie movie.
Because dude, Warm Bodies is pretty. Have you seen it?
Yes, I've seen most of it, and I was like, eh.
Yeah, I was
symbolically rich.
Yeah, okay. I was very surprised.
And maybe that's the case. I did not enjoy it as like just like a peripheral, just, you know, eat your popcorn and go kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, like, you know, I wouldn't rate the movie super highly, but I was like, wow, this is pretty deep for what I thought was going to be a teen comedy.
Okay,
you know.
Well, maybe I'll be there.
Or like a zombie. Maybe I won't. A zombie genre ripoff thing.
It's okay. All my friends will be out of town. I'll be there. My friends are out of town.
You know that R stands for Romeo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, don't ruin it. That's some of the
spoiler
fun trivia.
There's trivia involved? What is this? Lord of the Rings?
It is.
I'm just saying.
I'm coming. I'll be here.
Okay.
Gosh, jeez. Is it at your house? No, it's at Hope.
It's at Hope.
Ah, I can bring beer. Good.
No, you can't. Because it's at a church.
What?
And it's not the church I get. Well, I guess it's it's the church you go to. You can do whatever you want.
I'll just brown bag it. It'll be okay.
No one will know. It's in the basement of the church.
It's in the basement. It doesn't count. It's not sanctified anyway. Yeah. We don't have wine. Grape juice.
Okay. So, anyway, this is pretty great because this is the 1, 2, 3, 4. This is, I don't know, somewhere in our summer series. That means, JR, you've been with us a number of times this summer, and I really appreciate you taking time to be here this many times.
My pleasure. I love this podcast.
Yes, I love this podcast, too. We have so much in common. We should be roommates. The kind of roommates Griffin likes to have. Oh, I could do this all day.
Continue.
All right, so, but, you know, part of the summer series, I'm trying to podcast more, and it's really, I've gotten a lot of feedback about it, and I think I might actually end up going to 3 podcasts a month, which will let us do older movies occasionally, which is kind of fun.
Yes.
Which is going to be great.
Like Rise of Planet of the Apes?
like very old movies like Rise.
Stop it.
Movies that came out almost 5 years ago.
No, I'm talking about like Spy Who Came in from the Cold. Like, let's go old school, black and white. Let's watch some like Paul Newman films.
It'll open the door for a lot of things. But either way, it's working out well, and I've really enjoyed getting more people involved. But we are here to talk about, man, I don't want to say the biggest movie of the summer, but it's certainly looking like it's pretty close.
I mean, it didn't open bigger than Transformers.
Yeah, and
bump that movie.
Yeah, and that's why I don't know how you want to measure this thing.
I think critically, it will be received as the biggest like blockbuster of the summer critically.
Critically, because it's not the highest rated. Or not the highest reviewed.
It's not the highest reviewed. I think just overall. I mean, I feel like. What are we saying is the highest reviewed? Is Edge of Tomorrow the highest reviewed still, or what?
No, I think.
Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes is
okay.
Still...
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I watched Rise. I'd never seen either one or Rise or Dawn, and I watched Rise the other night. Pretty good. I gave it a seven. Which that's pretty high.
You're doing out of a 10.
I do an out of 10. Okay. I rate everything on IMDb. I have a profile on there that I keep everything rated that I watch. And I started that like 3 months ago. So there's not much on there.
See, you should have come over to Letterboxd since that's where I'm at.
Letterboxd? What's that?
I'll show you later.
Okay. Anyways, I watched that, and so I'm going to go see Dawn probably Saturday, maybe Sunday. Well, I've got my dad gave me like a $20 gift card to go see movies, so I'm going to use that.
I'm going to say that'll see a half a movie.
Well, I'm going to go in the afternoons.
Okay. Actually, unless you go wherever JR goes. This still kills me. I don't know
how. How much is it, JR?
If you go to the theater that we go to, which is 10 minutes from my house, and you go any day to the first showing of the film, it's the ticket base price is $5.
Whoa.
Yeah. So like an IMAX 3D is $10 because you have to pay $5.
$5 for IMAX. Yeah. Whoa. Hey, so where do you live again?
He lives in Ohio, the gem of the Midwest.
Is that what they call it? Really? They call it that?
It's the gem city.
They call it that?
Only the people that live there.
Oh, okay.
Not the people who drive through.
Not the people that pass through there. Because no. I've been through Ohio once or twice, and I just... No. I could not get myself to give any...
If you guys spent 3 days here, you'd never want to leave.
Really? That's awesome. That's his claim.
All right, Ohio was awesome.
I'm so busy trying to get people to leave Ohio to move here.
JR.
Well, actually, I have another friend who lives there, too.
Yeah, Mikey has two best friends, and you know what I mean by that, who live in Ohio and Dayton, Ohio, nonetheless.
Two of Mikey's best friends is just like, it's very odd.
It's the kind of guys I could live with.
Yeah, if you know what
Not Mary. Not Mary.
If you know what I mean. I hate this joke.
The best part is that you started it.
Oh, I started it. I did not intend for it to be taken in that way.
Okay. So
back to the movie.
So the summer. I think you're probably right there. I think of the when people look back, this will probably be the summer of Guardians of the Galaxy.
It'll probably be the one that people remember. And I'm not saying that Planet of the Apes isn't going to be like for me. I'm not saying it's. I'm not going to love it.
Well, I think you.
I may even rate it critically higher than I rated Guardians, but. But I think I'll remember this summer for the fact that Guardians of the Galaxy got made, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
and not just got made, but like
got made really well.
It opened huge,
yep.
And it was phenomenal.
Yeah,
yeah, and I don't really see anything stopping that over the next couple weeks. Mm. So
not Ninja Turtles?
No,
bullcrap.
What?
No, I think.
Just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
I thought he was being serious. I mean, I feel like that movie has a fan base that will come out for it. I don't think that. I mean, I think we're talking opening numbers, you know, what, maybe 70% of what Guardians did this weekend?
Maybe
60, 70.
I think 60 would be pretty positive for that.
Yeah. Is he messaging you right now? What is he saying?
He wants to talk about the marketing strategy for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
So tell me about the marketing strategy for Guardians of the Galaxy, JR.
Well, I mean, okay, so no, we need to, like... This is a crazy, crazy, crazy thing that has happened, okay?
Okay, hold on one second. All right, let me do this. Just because I want to...
Posterity.
Do your intro.
This is what we do. All right, so we are talking about Guardians of the Galaxy on this episode.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, I don't know why you'd be listening to this without, but Guardians of the Galaxy is a story that centers around Peter Quill, the outlaw who refers to himself as Star-Lord, and the pursuit and relationships that result from the manhunt that follows him when he discovers one of the universe's most powerful objects, an Infinity Stone, which is an overly simplified version of all the stuff that we get in this movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty great, and I'm very excited to talk about it. And I think this is a movie that most people don't know a whole lot about. Or at least they didn't until everyone in the world went to see it.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
This past
nobody,
weekend.
I mean, I would say, even in comics, less than 20% of fans would be able to tell you with, like, honesty what the Guardians of the Galaxy are about.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is what leads us to the marketing for this film.
Okay.
JR.
Yeah, so to set the stage, and I'll send Mikey this article. There was a great Forbes article that came out that was breaking down weekend box office, and it really took some time to talk about how astounding this weekend is, because the biggest opening weekend of 2014 so far belongs to the celluloid abomination that is Transformers Age of Extinction. Okay, it opened a little over 100 million.
Just stop being mad about it. Move on.
Ugh. All right. Wine for 5 seconds, and then we move
okay.
on.
Yeah. Okay. The second largest opening of the year was Captain America Winter Soldier, which is the third Marvel film in Phase 2. It's opening off of the Avengers. It's opening off of a previous film, Captain America. So it had a lot of momentum going into it. It
has Chris Evans in it. People are going to go see it because it's like, oh, it's Chris Evans.
Right. There's a lot of reasons that people wanted to go see Captain America Winter Soldier. It was outstanding, fantastic movie, and it opened at $95 million. Okay. Guardians of the Galaxy opened at $94 million. 1 million shy of Captain America Winter Soldier, and it is as we all just said, no one knew anything about it before that first trailer dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Even the comic fans were not excited about Guardians of the Galaxy until Marvel said they were making it. But if you think about how the film was marketed, first of all, it is a Marvel property, so it does have some innate trust built up. This was the 10th Marvel film that mm-hmm. has come out. So there is some trust that's been sort of like Pixar, right? Before they made Brave.
And can we agree that there's not been an awful one?
I would agree with that. I would say Marvel's Hulk movie with Ed Norton was good. It wasn't great, but it was good.
It was good. I mean, I feel like if you talk about from Phase 1 on, there hasn't been a true dud in the bunch. I think that there are ones that you could say, I didn't like this part, but there hasn't been like a true awful, like. Yeah, there hasn't been one.
Well, and if you look at the box office, there certainly has not been a dud.
Yeah, no.
You know, they haven't made it. Say what you will, if you didn't like the first Thor or second Iron Man or whatever, they still performed very well at the box office.
Which isn't the only thing we would measure it by, because obviously, once again, Transformers.
No, but that is the only thing Marvel would measure it by.
we all know who runs that company, and that's all he cares about. So.
That's right. You have the first trailer that drops, which is the goofiest thing, you know, right? It's got Hooked on a Feeling playing in it. It specifically makes fun of the fact that no one knows who these guys are, right? It opens up with him being like, "I'm Star-Lord," and the guy goes, "Who?" And then at the end of the episode, at the end of the trailer, John C. Reilly goes, "They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy," and the guy's like, "What a bunch of a-holes!" And like, That's like it makes fun of the fact that you don't know who these people are, right? And so then the next trailers really ramp up the action. They give you just a little taster of Rocket and Groot, which were like undeniably like made that film just insanely fun. Mm-hmm. I think it just perfectly set up making people want to go see this. And they saved some of the best comic beats and the best action beats out of the trailers.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing, was that I didn't feel like... So I kind of, after the second trailer came out, I stopped looking at any trailers for the movie because I was like, I want to see it with fresh eyes and not have my, you know, I don't want to get messed around by, you know, the trailers. You know, you see all the comic beats, but some of the funniest lines, almost all the funniest lines, were left out, and I was so grateful for that, just to be able to go in there and see it and be like, I didn't see any of this, and it's hilarious.
I did a Thursday night opening, and then I went again and saw it with my wife later that weekend, and I actually missed a ton of lines the first time because everyone was laughing so hard.
Yep. Yeah,
we had one of those.
that happened to us too.
But for completely different reasons than you're thinking. Thinking everyone was just enjoying their night, but this guy had one of those awful laughs that you just like want to kind of strangle him a little bit. Shut up.
Well, it was like almost like he was making fun of people who were laughing, except he wasn't joking. It was
over the top.
So we missed like half, you know, because there was like a one-liner followed by a zinger, and we'd always miss the zinger.
Yep.
And it was so frustrating. But the second time, you know, we were like, I'm waiting for it this time, and it was great. But yeah, I do believe that the marketing in this, it was pretty genius. But then again, I think that's just a reflection of the film itself. I think it's really, really hard to introduce one character that people don't know and make you like them. I think it's even harder to introduce, like, you know, a half a dozen characters and make it work.
So are you saying that you liked all six characters by the end of the movie?
I liked all six characters at the beginning.
Five characters.
Yeah, all five characters by the
end of the movie. I was like, wait, I need you to count for me.
Yeah.
I was using half a dozen as a general thing, and then realized we were taking that literally.
No, I just took it literally for some reason. But yeah, so you liked all five characters by the end of the movie?
Oh, yeah. I liked all five characters by the middle of the movie.
Okay.
I did have problems with certain things in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know, I didn't think it was a perfect movie. It's not my favorite Marvel film, and we can talk about that too. But I do want to know, like, I think it's fairly obvious from how we're talking about it that we did enjoy the movie, but I would be remiss. This is another for posterity thing. You know, can you give me some of the things that you enjoyed about the movie? Since I know both of you guys enjoyed the movie, JR, what are some of the things that you really enjoyed about it?
Well, so I've been a James Gunn fan since Slither, which I don't know if you guys saw that film. It's a 2006, like, it's a B movie with an A movie budget. It's got Nathan Fillion from Firefly as the lead.
It's great.
And yeah, it's just phenomenal. And what I loved about, and then Super also, I don't know if you guys saw that from 2010 with Dwight from The Office, Rainn Wilson. James Gunn does an incredibly good job of taking something absurd and making it, playing it straight, but in such a way that you also know that he's not taking it too seriously. And you had to have that with Guardians of the Galaxy, because you have a talking raccoon, you have a tree that only says three words, right? There's these things that just are dumb. And if you want them to work, you have to play them totally straight, but at the same time also be winking at the audience and going, yeah, I know this is crazy, let's just have some fun. And I felt like the movie just nailed that. I mean, Rocket... I've also been reading the comic since Brian Michael Bendis took it over last year. And so Rocket Raccoon is one of my favorite characters in comics. I just think he's, like, hilariously off-the-wall insane. And I thought they just did all of that perfectly. So, yeah, I love the characters. I loved how they chose to play Peter Quill. You know, he has several different incarnations in the comics, everything from, like, almost like a Superman kind of, like, straight-laced nobility to, like, the more outlaw Han Solo kind of feel that he had in this film. And I thought that was a great choice for this. There's all kinds of themes I liked about it, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But, you know, and there were, like you said, there are things I didn't love too, but just the tone, the humor, the action, the swashbuckling, that was what I really liked about it.
Yeah, I liked that it didn't buy into the whole, like, let's just be super dark ever at any point in the film.
Right.
It never got too serious. I think the closest it ever got was like that opening scene where you meet a Ronin and he like slays that guy. And yeah. That's about as dark as the film gets from that point forward. And
which for Phase 2 is completely different, because Phase 2 has basically been dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's where I like appreciate that Phase 2 has been dark because all the characters just went through like their first like real trauma.
Mm-hmm.
They all just experienced, like, even, you know, you saw it with Iron Man 3, you saw it with Captain America. They're all really dealing with their first real trauma. You can tell that I like that the Guardians are removed from it. They clearly haven't experienced that.
Yeah.
In that way. They have in other ways. They all have, you know, and I like that he introduced these backstories that were really sad. Like, I think the backstories of all the characters were pretty sad.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it never got to the point, he never let it sit too long. He gave it to you to think about, but he never let it sit too long that you were like, you felt awful about the movie. You know, you felt like it was a sad movie.
Yeah.
It never felt like a sad movie. There were sad moments, but it never felt like a sad movie, which was good. And so I think I like that. I like that he did a great job building character of all of them within a very short amount of time. It wasn't a 2.5 hour movie.
It wasn't all talky, right? I mean, he built the characters through the action beats, which is hard to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. It's really difficult. And so I really enjoyed that. I really appreciated that. And then obviously I really liked a lot of, you know, the humor was great. I thought that they nailed a lot of the characters. I thought that they kind of missed on a couple points, but nothing major that I was like, that's not how that character is.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that that Marvel is saying, hey, you know, these characters don't have to be the comics. Like, they can be their own thing. You can do your own thing with them. You know, to make them fit what you want your story to look like. So
I
want
to return to that when we get to talking about things we didn't like, because I think that's an important point.
Okay.
Well, I'll say that I did really enjoy the movie too. I mean, I actually enjoyed it more the second time that I saw it. I really enjoyed it the first time.
Because Chuckles the Clown wasn't in front of you?
He was right behind us.
Yeah, he was right in our ear.
Yeah.
Was he making fun of your laugh? Is that what this is?
No. It wasn't. He wasn't making fun of anything. It was that he... He never, like, there were serious moments, and he was still laughing at, like, level 10.
Yeah.
And it was just like, dude, calm down. I think he was really excited, and I think he'd had a little bit to drink.
It possibly.
Oh, wow.
We were in one of the cushy theaters, like the over 21 theaters, so we wouldn't be watching it with, you know,
Obnoxious kids. But obnoxious drunks.
So it was not, you know.
Yeah,
foiled.
You gotta take what you can get, right?
And that's the thing, because I typically don't laugh out loud a ton.
I rarely there were only a couple times that I laughed out loud.
Yeah, I typically chuckle and I smile really, really big.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't making fun of my laugh. If he did, he's doing a very bad impression. So, but no, okay. So this movie, I really love the casting.
Okay.
I mean, given I haven't seen the comic, so I don't know, you know, but we've kind of hit on that. It doesn't necessarily need to be exactly like the comic.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But for how they made each of these characters, I mean, Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, and his very slim bit of script, Bradley Cooper, you know, I that was one of the best things to me. Like, I never thought Bradley Cooper sounded like Bradley Cooper.
Voicing, totally.
I was like, oh, that's just, you know, this other thing. And then they bring in all kinds of other things, like when John C. Reilly and, you know, Josh Brolin, Benicio Del Toro, they have really, like, good actors and actresses in this movie. Glenn Close was in it, you know, and it's like, are they just putting names in here for a film about people we don't know so that you'll go see it? You're like, oh, I recognize that actor. I guess it can't be bad. No, like, I think they use all these actors in a good way. And, you know, and I kind of agree with JR. I mean, I've enjoyed what James Gunn has done to this point, and I think this is, you know, I hope this isn't the best we'll ever see from him, because I think it's going to be hard to top.
I mean, Guardians 2 is already announced, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, the bar is really high, but, you know, the bar is really high with most of the Marvel movies right now, so even making a good Marvel movie right now would probably be a letdown to some of the predecessors. And I think that's the thing people don't realize, what we talked about earlier. Like, can we all agree that in as far as like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the last 10 films go, there's not been a dud? And that's, I think what people would point out, Iron Man 2 or Thor or, you know, whatever they want to point to,
or that first Hulk movie. I mean, that, or the second Hulk movie was part of Phase 1.
Yeah, and like that's the thing. I think they're still good movies, but, you know, if you compare them to, like, the Avengers or the best of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I can see how you would think it was bad, but it's really not bad if you compare it to something outside.
Compared to Green Lantern.
Yeah, so...
Well, compared to Green Lantern, there are very few movies that that are above, that are, you know, that are below that standard.
Like so. The Transformers series, and that's about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So I mean, you think about it like that, and the other the sub question to did you like it is, where would you probably rank it? Because I feel like this is the question you get every time.
Yeah.
And I almost don't want to indulge it, but I think it's just so necessary, and people really want to know. It's like BuzzFeed quizzes or the top 10 the top 10 things you would recognize if you were a child of the 80s. You know, like everyone wants it that way. So I would want to know the ranking. So JR, like, where would you put this in, you know, the top couple, or where would you put it in the thing?
Yeah, you know, I would probably say Guardians, Avengers, Winter Soldier.
Okay.
And then after that, Iron Man 3.
With any hesitation in those top three, or like?
Yeah, and let me say it this way. I am willing to concede that objectively Avengers is probably a better film, though the first act was pretty problematic in more ways than the Guardians of the Galaxy first act. And the villains were probably comparably but I
which actually may be more of a Marvel cinematic thing. I think we'll see.
Yeah,
that formula, the villains.
Yeah, I think that they're playing it smart, and yeah. I mean, they're not pulling out their guns early and just being like, "Here's all the toys." You know, they're keeping a lot back, and I think I appreciate that. The fact that they're doing Thanos this early is even surprising to me. I was like, "Eh, that's a bit early to bring out your big gun," but I think that there's a lot of really cool movies. I feel like Marvel has got some things up their sleeve with Phase 4 and Phase 5 that we won't, you know, expect.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is the hard part, though. We're not drawing comics, so we can't draw these characters at the same age for 30 years. So if they're teasing Thanos now, we're going to have Thanos within the next couple years.
Well, have you heard how they're addressing that?
Well, I'm not really...
The actor transition?
You mean for all the Avengers?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. that's what you're kind of implying.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, like, that's what I'm implying. Yes, I have not heard that. I want to know.
They're going to James Bond it.
They're just going to start...
No, they're just going to have a different person in the
scene. Yeah, and it's just...
It's you're still the
so
same
Robert,
guy.
Robert Downey Jr. isn't disregard. Tony Stark anymore, but, you know, whoever the next Tony Stark is has the same continuity, and everything that happened to Robert Downey Jr. happened to this guy, and he's going on.
Yeah, I kind of hate that already.
Really? Why?
Because
you want them to reboot every time there's a new character?
Not necessarily, but once you establish a character that's so good, it's really hard for me to imagine that it's somebody else. I mean, I was even bothered by Don Cheadle, as much as I love Don Cheadle replacing the other guy Terrence Howard. You know, I was like, that bothered me.
Well, the other thing, I don't know how much you guys heard about all the speculation in the comics, but then they just announced that Sam Wilson, who is the Falcon, is taking over for Steve Rogers because he got depowered and now he's old and whatever. Mm-hmm.
Well, aren't they going to... I know where you're going with that, to say it's going to be, you know, Sam Wilson.
Maybe.
I don't feel like that's... I don't feel like that should be their response... That's my thing about Marvel, is that they like to diversify things for the sake of diversifying things, and they've done that for years. Well, not for years. They've done that for like the last 5 years a lot. And I don't know. I'm not saying that like they should keep Steve Rogers in the suit, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't introduce characters that aren't white, tall, white, you know, guys.
Chiseled, gorgeous men.
Yeah,
that I don't know to be a roommate with.
Yeah. I don't know that. I don't know. I don't want them to keep it that way. I don't want them to stick around with this, like, you know, chiseled men thing. But I also don't know that, like, fixing it that way. I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with them fixing it with story and saying, like, oh, like, Tony Stark died and Pepper Potts takes over and she's in the suit now, which is, I mean, that's been in comics, even though it wasn't a great story.
Right. Well, but so in the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this moment, they have three options when Chris Evans is done with his contract. They can James Bond him and just get someone else.
Mm-hmm.
They can have Bucky take over, mm-hmm. which they've laid some groundwork for. Or they can have Sam Wilson take over, which they also in the comics are laying groundwork for.
Or they could just re-sign Chris Evans.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at some point, Chris Evans is going to die, right?
I mean,
like, that's what I mean. Like, at some point, this will be a real problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're at least making some, they're creating some options for themselves. I think it will all be determined by who's in the comic book, because you know that at the end of the, like I don't know if you guys were reading Spider-Man, but for 2 years Peter Parker was dead and Dr. Octopus had mindswiped with him and was actually living in Peter Parker's body as Peter Parker slash Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, and it was, and this, you knew that that was, I mean, that's the thing is, I remember whenever that happened, I was still working in a store at that point.
Okay.
And all of the customers were like, I'm done with these. They're not going to, if I can't have my Peter Parker ever again. I was like, look, I was like, in 2 years, there's a Spider-Man movie coming out.
Exactly.
Peter Parker will be back in the body, yep, because they're not stupid.
They're like, not
they
stupid.
They may be. You may not like some of the things they've done, but they're not idiots. So you know, and that's where,
and that's exactly it. The comics continuity is going to continue to affect the Marvel Cinematic Universe and vice versa.
Yeah, because they want to sell books. I mean, yep, they're not. They want. They're like, hey, if we can double and triple and quadruple our money, yeah, by doing this other thing, you know, why not? So, yep, and that's just like, I mean, I went into three comic stores this week, and all three of them have had huge Guardians displays.
What?
I'm surprised.
Yeah. So, well, and I'm like, where did you find all this stuff? I didn't even know you had this stuff.
Reprint it.
Yeah, well, that's also the thing. Howard the Duck, is his omnibus is getting reprinted now. What the heck? God. Who cares? Like the
James Gunn cares. That's who
the,
cares.
The 1% of fans who hang out at conventions and ask that question during Marvel panels. Oh, what are you doing with Howard the Duck? Nothing. Go away. it's awful.
Okay, so that was fun. But now, Griffin, you have to answer the question.
Avengers Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy. Only because I just feel like Joss's script was like just way better. And mm-hmm, I realized that some story beats weren't there. Joss's script was better, and I just felt like it was, yeah. Winter Soldier, because I loved the Cap and Bucky story. Like, it's probably my favorite story in comics. Brubaker is easily one of my favorite writers, and that was one of my favorite stories. And then you talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, I had very little problems with. If anything, it was just some... So, like I said, like I've said to you multiple times, I just feel like there were some script things that I didn't really like that were too heavy-handed.
Well, I think Guardians is a pretty straightforward script.
Yeah, it was pretty basic.
There are some things that I saw happen in Guardians that I feel... this makes me feel like a Whedon elitist, but I feel like if Joss Whedon did, he would not have done it the way that James Gunn did. Mm-hmm. And the way James Gunn did made it work really well. But
oh, Groot would be dead.
Yeah. I mean,
there wouldn't be a dancing Groot at the end of the film if Joss Whedon had done it. He'd been like, hey, you're dead. And forever. But, well, I mean, for fans of the comics, I hated that they made that to be such a thing. But Groot, you'll die. I'm like, are we kidding? He's going to get replanted. It happens every issue of Guardians right now with Bendis. It feels like he kills him every issue. So,
well, I would probably have to agree that my top three are probably Avengers, Winter Soldier, and then Guardians of the Galaxy with a really close Captain America: The First Avenger. I feel like I'm on an island, but I really love the first Captain America movie.
It's five for me just because I love Iron Man as a mm-hmm. character, and so Iron Man would get four. But
yeah, five, well, Iron Man and The First Avenger were almost there. There's like, it's like 1, 2, 3, and then like there's like a tie for. With like for three movies for like fourth or something like that, which is great. I think that speaks very highly of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about how this movie ties into the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that even though we don't get to see any of the other Avengers, we don't get to see any of the other small characters that we've really been hinted at, except for Thanos and then Alexis Denisoff's character, like the mouth guy for the announcer, the other. For Thanos. Oh,
yeah. The one that was messing with Loki all the time.
Yeah. So we don't really get a whole lot of tie-in. And the collector,
I guess you kind of get... I guess you kind of got a picture of him. And,
yeah.
Anyways.
In the extra scene.
Yeah.
So we have very few ties to the actual Marvel Cinematic Universe with this movie, but I think character-wise that might be true, but this sets a really high precedent because we're messing with more Infinity Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anytime we're messing with Infinity Stones, we're talking about something that's going to greatly affect the entire rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And if you miss the importance of the Infinity Stones, JR, could you just explain what they are, kind of where they are, and why it matters?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, and there's a great, again, shockingly, people on the internet have done great write-ups of these, and so we'll send that to Mikey so he can post it, but the Infinity Stones are a comic trope that have been around in the Marvel Universe for several decades, and the way they're being described in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you got it first explicitly in Thor: The Dark World, where they said that before the universe was created, there were these six energies that got condensed into stones, and actually one of them then wasn't a stone, and that was the ether that was in Thor: The Dark World. And so what we know, and this is true in the comics and is true in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is there are these six stones, and each of them has a particular power, and in the comics, there was this storyline called the Infinity Gauntlet, and Thanos, who's like the biggest, one of the biggest bads in the entire Marvel comic universe, gets this thing called the Infinity Gauntlet. Which, did we not see that in the first Thor movie?
Yeah, we saw a glimpse.
Okay.
of
Okay,
it.
it was in the Hall of Treasures. Yeah, that in Asgard.
Well, like, yeah, just the actual like gauntlet itself, right. Not with any of the gems or any, yeah.
Correct. And so this device, it's a, you know, basically a big metal glove, was created to be able to harness and wield all six of the Infinity Stones at the same time. And so Thanos goes around trying to collect them, and of course, basically everyone who's good or even like just not that bad in the entire Marvel universe,
such as the Guardians
of
the Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So what was crazy was in the first Captain America, you had the Tesseract, and everyone's like, what is that? It's a cosmic cube, blah, blah, blah. There's a bunch of debate. Well, it sort of turned out in Avengers that the Tesseract is one of those Infinity Stones. And so there's a lot of speculation now about which one is which, but they're pretty sure the Tesseract is the one called the Space Stone. And it's hard because in the comic, they're all color-coded. But they're clearly not following that color coding in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, probably to throw all of us uber nerds off. But Space Stone is exactly
they're smart.
Space Stone is exactly what it sounds like. It allows you to move space. So if you think about what Loki did with it, right, he opened a portal and brought this army through. So that was that one. And it's currently at Asgard. They capture it and they return with it to Asgard, so we know they're holding it. And in fact, at the end of Thor 2, with the reality, that's the reality stone. It reshapes reality. They specifically said it's dangerous to have two of these in one place, so we're not going to keep the ether on Asgard. We're going to give it to the collector. And so we knew that the collector had one of the six Infinity Stones. The third one is the one that we were introduced to in Guardians of the Galaxy, the Power Stone. And it's, of course, ended up on Xandar, and it was actually pretty crazy that the Collector was about to get it, because, again, we knew, unlike the Guardians of the Galaxy, that he already had one of them, and so he would have two of them at that point. And he didn't even make a comment at the end of Thor 2. He said, one down, five to go.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, we know that he knows what's going on. And then this is where it gets crazy, because there's still three left after those three, one on Asgard, one with the Collector, and one on Xandar. So there's some speculation that Loki's staff contained the stone in that staff is not just a link to the Tesseract, that's actually the Mind Stone, and of course it controlled Hawkeye's mind, if you remember that from Avengers, mm-hmm. right? And we saw how it interacted with the Tesseract, that there was a clear interaction with their power. So that's a lot of people are speculating that's the fourth stone, and if that's the case, Baron Von Strucker actually has that, as we saw at the end of Captain America: Winter Soldier. So, there's still two missing. There's the Soul Stone and the Time Stone. In the original comic, a character named Adam Warlock had the Soul Stone, mm-hmm. and so if they continue with that, he'll probably be introduced, maybe even in Avengers 3.
I'm convinced that they will not introduce that character.
Really?
Because
they already have Star-Lord?
Well, no, not because they already have Star-Lord. Because they have kept him out of comics. He's been one of the few characters that's like stayed dead in Marvel for a while.
Okay.
And I've had conversations with people who would know, and they've told me that there's no plans to bring him back ever.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
And I, you know, that could totally, you know, obviously those things change all the time. And, you know, there are stories going on in comics right now that are going to, that could be really big. I don't know that they'll ever introduce Adam Warlock, mainly just because he's not in comics right now. They couldn't sell anything. If they did sell anything, they'd have to reprint a whole lot of stuff that's not in print right now. Uh-huh. So it's just, well, it's kind of.
The other option is the Doctor Strange movie.
And that's where I'm, that's what I think. Mainly because Doctor Strange is one of those characters that just inhabits a lot of places, and he's held one in the comics many times. So
right.
Well, no, and that would be Phase 3.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Infinity, I mean, I feel like we may get another Stone in Avengers. I feel like, or in the next Avengers movie, in Ultron.
So, here's my theory, because the last one is the Time Stone.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, I thought it was strange that the Ant-Man movie was featuring an old Hank Pym.
Okay.
And a young, what's the other guy, Scott, whatever.
Scott Lang, who Scott steals Lang, who yeah. steals Ant-Man, like, who steals the powers, basically.
Right. I would be pretty fascinated if there was some kind of time travel element or something, just because I think it's weird that they made Hank Pym the old guy.
Well, and I'm kind of the mindset that I don't know that all that will happen yet. You talk about the problem that they're going to have with actors at the end of whatever Phase 3 is, at the end of probably what is Thanos, the Infinity Gauntlet story.
Right.
I think that whatever happens in that movie will reset things to the point that they can hire entirely new actors for everything.
Just like X-Men.
Yeah. So what Griffin was just saying is, you know, we know that cinematic Phase 2 is going to come to a close with Age of Ultron. Which is next May.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Ant-Man will come out in the summer, and that
it's
will
like
begin,
June and July, right?
Yeah. And that will begin Phase 3. We know we're getting an Ant-Man. We know we're getting a Doctor Strange. We know we're getting a third Captain America. And then we know we're getting another Guardians of the Galaxy before 2018, which would be Avengers 3. And all of the speculation is that Avengers Phase 3 will be Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet.
Because that's the end of a lot of their contracts, right, for the actors, correct?
Right.
Okay. At present, yes.
And that would make sense, is that they, you know, unless they're going to re-sign them to a, I mean, at this point, they can all ask, it's kind of like the NFL, you can ask for a huge deal at this point for all of them, and they can all be like, yeah, I'm going to twist you for money.
Well, actually, I think one of the things that I really liked about what they did in Guardians, like, not only was it tied in with these Infinity Stones, but it was really familiar to other types of stories that we already like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if either of you guys have seen, like, the little cartoon that's been going around. I think it goes around anytime there's, like, a space group of people that does well in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, at Fox Studios, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy is doing so well. We need a property like this with people, you know, some ruffians in a spaceship, and the spaceship needs to look cool, and there needs to be a dude with lots of guns and, you know, weird whatever. And some dude's like, we already made that. It's called Serenity. And then they throw him out the window. I mean, do you guys see similarities? I think the two things that Guardians of the Galaxy, since it has, you know, it's not Captain America, it's not Iron Man, it doesn't have a history that's well known. Do either you guys see similarities between, like, Star Wars or like Firefly? Like, do those hold up, or are people just grasping at straws? Because I feel like there might be some stuff there.
I feel like that there is some stuff there Star Wars wise. I know that. You know, a lot of these characters, especially kind of the newer iterations of them, were created kind of after the fact of Star Wars. And so I think whenever I think about it that way, yes. I feel like the story itself in the movies holds up really well because I think it gets at what a lot of people loved about Serenity. And so I think that's like, you know, it kind of takes me back to those, like, really cool stories.
Well, what do you mean by that? What do people love about Serenity?
I think people love about Serenity is that it's like this family of people that you're like, they don't all really go together. And they actually don't go together well at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they work, and they're funny, and there's, like, some really deep stuff, and there's, like, a lot of background and a lot of history to the characters, and there's characters in there that you're not sure why they're there. There's just, like, a lot there for people who, like, see themselves in that. They find themselves in one of those people, and they're like, that's... I really associate myself with this character in the Guardians, and I feel that way about the people. Like, you know, that it just doesn't make sense that we all hang out. You know, yeah. I think we all kind of see our friend group whenever we look at those kind of things.
Yeah, I totally agree. That whole like, this isn't the family I was born with. There's a lot of tragedy in my past, and despite, I mean, that scene in the middle of Guardians when Star-Lord's like, "This is why none of you have friends," you know, he, like, freaks out on them. Like, that's it. That's the heart of the film, right? He's like, because 5 minutes after you meet someone, you're trying to kill them, and that's that. They're, because of the trauma they've experienced, they have this inability to trust. And they are forced to trust each other and end up finding a family. Like, that's like, who can't relate to that? Who doesn't that not resonate with? So
yeah, it's because there's a further down when he has his other speech. You know, when I look around, I see a whole bunch of losers. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, people who have, like, we're people who have lost things. You know,
it's like, no, it's the loser one. It's
you know, because they all buck up. They're like, they don't want to be called losers. They're, you know, they're strong characters. They don't want to be, they're winners. Except they know they're not. That's the thing. And I love this concept, and I think that's one of the reasons that even though we don't get like a Star-Lord movie and like a Groot movie and, you know, like a Drax movie. When they come together, we're not having trouble getting on board with all these characters, mm-hmm. because we like feel their pain, and I think it's really easy, even though people sometimes wouldn't admit it. I think one of the things that brings people together is hurt or loss, and pain. Like, it's amazing how many like family feuds will be put aside when there's like the death in the family. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when, you know, people are squabbling over little things, but someone comes home and they got laid off from their job, and, you know, there's an immediate, like, reaching out, like a sympathy. And, like, this just brings people together. And I love to see that in this film, because I think it's one of those things that you could call it a, you know, a trope in the film where it's like, oh, well, they're just using this to get people on board. But it works. And I have no problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you can say something.
We'll cut that out.
Yeah, we'll cut that out.
Silence.
Well, okay, so the other thing that I think the reason I think this film works a lot more is also because it does a whole lot of the things that the Avengers does. People love to see teamwork. They love to see, like I said, the not quite anti-hero, because none of these people, I would say, are really bad. I mean, except for the greater everybody is bad kind of theological point of view. Like, all these people are like good intention, poor decision making people, or they're a victim of their circumstances, and they're all trying to do something that we could typically get on board with, or they're the lovable idiot, things like that. And I think kind of what Griffin said earlier is very true. Like, you know, we can get behind characters like that. We can identify with characters like that. You know, when you look around, you see people who fit those descriptions. And so I think this whole concept of people coming together from different walks of life just really works, and people identify with it. I mean, I think that's one of the things that made Avengers so successful, because you had a whole bunch of people that should have never come together. And, you know, Joss Whedon found a way to convince them to come together. You know, through Samuel Jackson. So,
yuck.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, the bit you brought up about the characters, like, that's something that's pretty different from the comics. And again, the comics, they can afford for Gamora to, I mean, they call her the most dangerous woman in the galaxy because she's killed, like, you know, a lot of people. And in the movie, it was sort of like, well, Ronan killed a lot of people, and she might have been there, maybe, probably, maybe, but look how she didn't want to be, you know. Drax was the same thing. Like, he was just really sad that his family died. And in the comics,
he was Drax the Destroyer or something like
Drax
that?
Drax the Destroyer. And they called him that, but they, I mean, and you see, I mean, when he fought, yeah, but I mean, like, again, this is a guy who basically, like, in the comics, after his family is killed, he just goes on like a galaxy-wide killing spree, like slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people. You know, and then Rocket and Groot are, I mean, they're bounty hunter, mercenary, whatever. They're not nearly as bad as the other two, but they, you know, they changed it to make them, and, you know, probably part of it is that they only had so much time. They wanted them all to be immediately likable. I wasn't mad or upset or anything about it, but I did notice that they definitely, like, massaged the characters quite a bit, in order to make them more palatable and to not have to deal with some of the unfortunate issues that would have arisen otherwise.
No, like I said, that's one of the things that I saw in a difference in with Avengers, because I don't know if it's simply because I had seen the previous movies, but I thought one of the best things about Avengers and the reason that it was so, well, I guess so good, is because I don't think you had to see the previous movies to understand what every single character's motivation was in Avengers.
Yeah.
I think you were introduced to the character, they were all given a motivation to be exactly where they were. And I feel like some of the character motivations in Guardians were kind of thrown together or glossed over very quickly. I mean, I really didn't understand why Gamora was doing what she was doing for the first bit of the film. I was like, wait, so Thanos is mean to her? Then why is she just now coming to this realization? Like, did we just happen to jump in at just the right time?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was my crux of it, too. It was just like they didn't really go into full... For understandable reasons, they didn't go into detail as to why what Thanos being mean to her means. But at the same time, I think that it just felt too perfect of a timing for her to be like, and now I'm going to change sides. But I guess, you know, a big payday, you know, that was a big payday. I think
it was specifically the orb. You know, like, that's her chance
to get out, because it's going to be a lot of money.
So we came along just the right time.
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw the right orb. And I mean, I love how the opening feels like the opening to is it the Last Crusade, Indiana Jones, where he goes in.
And
I love how it felt like that for that. You know, it was very, very much like that, and it felt like that. And then, crap hits the fan, and he's got to kind of protect this thing from everybody else who wants it for different reasons. But, you know, it didn't. I think when you think about it in that way of like, this is a big payday, it makes sense that she would come in at that moment.
And it's not so much that we came along at the right moment as it was that the orb was the inciting incident for all of this.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Quill is sent to find the orb. Ronan finds out about it and sends his best assassin. Peter ends up with a bounty on him. That's how we get Rocket and Groot. And then they're in the same prison as Drax. Like, there's all, you know, it didn't bother me because I felt like, again, given what they were trying to do, they brought a lot of people in pretty quickly. And I don't know that, like, it definitely helped seeing it twice, but I felt like once I saw it, I was like, "Yeah, you know, like, I buy it. Like, I'm okay.
I'm down with that." Well, so how else did this movie kind of come off to you?
Like, I can tell you my biggest problem with it. Is that kind of where we are? Okay, yeah, my biggest problem with it was Ronan, or the Accuser. And so this was like I was saying earlier, you know, Avengers had its own problems in the first act. The struggle in this one is you're trying to introduce, like, five different galactic civilizations in 15 seconds apiece.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so the Kree Empire, like, we don't know enough about them to know what an Accuser is or, like, why he's so mad that there's this peace treaty. I mean, we're just kind of told some stuff, but we don't ever see, like, the Kree homeworld or anything. Same thing with Xandar and the Nova Corps. Like, I was geeking out because I've read the comics and I know what all this stuff is, but I was trying to imagine, like, man, if I didn't know anything, if I was just, this is my first experience, like, Ronan the Accuser is just this, like, he's just, like, mean for the sake of being mean, sort of. And, I mean, again, they sort of, I don't know. And the other problem is that was my least favorite casting choice. I thought he looked pretty good, but he did not sell it at all for me. I wanted him to be, like, deliciously evil, and I thought he was just kind of like, eh. Like, do you really mean it, dude? Like, are you really mad? I don't, you know.
Well, but I think he comes off as most of the Marvel Cinematic Universe villains. Like, he's there so our good guys have something to develop their characters for the audience around for later films.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because in the comics, it's much less cut and dry that the accusers of the Kree Empire are villains. You know, and in fact, in some of the comic storylines, notably like the Annihilation stuff that went on, Ronan is actually a good guy, you know? And so I thought this, Griffin, what you said earlier about how they don't have to hew strictly to the comics, but I could imagine some of the comic readers being upset by the way they used Ronan and the fact that they killed him and everything, sort of in the same way they were mad about the Mandarin. Like, that's not how it was in the comics. And that doesn't bother me at all, because if I want Ronan in the comics, I'll just read the comics. Yeah. But it was interesting that they didn't, I don't know, just the way they characterized him and how little they gave him to do besides sort of twirl his mustache and be evil, you know?
Well, I feel like besides Loki and what we're getting hinted at in the, you know, the meta narrative of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Thanos, I think almost all the bad guys in every film are just bad, just for the sake of being bad.
Yeah.
Except for whatever.
I think that you gloss over Winter Soldier and the I felt like the villain, Big V, in that story was awesome. Yeah, well, and they're not bad for the sake of being
like Robert
bad.
Redford.
I think more like Hydra, and you talk about Winter Soldier. Like, I guess in some ways, Winter Soldier was a villain in that movie. He was someone that they had to fight against. But then I think when you talk about Hydra infiltrating S.H.I.E.L.D. and that whole like more. Not nearly as like cut and dry for the rest of the world that this guy's a villain, that this person, that this team's a villain. You know, with Loki, we know he's a villain. With Ronan, we know he's a villain. With, you know, as if we were in the world at that point, we would know he's a villain. If you're in the world at the point of like what's going on with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Winter Soldier, it's not as cut and dry. It's not as simple as he's a villain. That's a villainous thing, because, you know, I just feel like it has more weight to it than that, and I like that. I like that. Oh, he's just killing the bad guys. He's just, you know, Minority Report. He's just killing the bad guys before they become bad. I don't see a problem with that. I feel like, I mean, yeah. Death penalty. Why not, right, guys? Yeah.
Yeah. I see what you mean. I'd say that's a notable exception.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's been. Yeah. I don't think that. Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that Winter Soldier's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one of the top Marvel films. But. I felt like when I was watching Ronan, I was watching. He could have been interchangeable with Christopher Eccleston and Thor 2.
Yeah,
it was right. Something that was going on around things that I was more interested in. You know, I was more interested in just the Guardians coming together and figuring out what they were going to do than actually.
And that final showdown after the ship crashes, it was perfect in all the weirdest ways.
Yeah, it was perfect. Oh, yeah. It was perfect in all the ways that it was like supposed to be. Like, very, yeah, it was super light. And I think that was my favorite part about it, was that I just laughed a lot of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so awkward, because it's supposed to be awkward.
Yeah, because they're an awkward team, like, because they don't really work really well together.
Well, and Star-Lord's kind of a doofus, you know? He's not, like, he just does the best he can, but he's the guy that's going to challenge you to a dance-off to save the universe.
That's right.
Yeah.
You got my dick message.
You got my dick message.
Yeah. So there's this thing about Star-Lord that kept, I guess, stuck with me for a long time after I saw the movie. A long time. It's been like 2 days since we've seen the movie.
I've never forgotten it since the day I saw it.
Yeah, since Saturday, I have not stopped thinking about this.
I've not stopped thinking about it for all of the 48
but like,
hours.
I really love the fact that, you know, he's really attached to his Walkman.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I take that and I realize that it it's not just, you know, obviously it's not just a Walkman to him. It's a symbolic thing that is his and that reminds him of another place and another time. And I would say, well, to a certain degree, I would say he draws strength from it. But, you know, it reminds him where he's from. And I think not trying to read too much into it, even though obviously I am, like, I feel like the reason that we enjoyed Guardians so much is because Guardians is our Walkman from the 80s. Like, this entire movie is one big Walkman to us. It reminds us, it reminds us of our childhood. I mean, that's why, like, I think that the people, you know, from 25 to 40 who went to see this movie are probably laughing harder at some of these jokes in this movie than, you know, some of the teenagers that are going to go see it. And I think that completely explains why that people are split right down the middle on the scene at the end.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's why people, I think the 25 to 40 crowd, or people who just really love comics and comic conventions, really love the ending, because it wasn't trying to sneak us something for a, you know, and I think someone on this podcast wrote something just about the ending.
I might have done that, yes.
JR might have done that. But I think one of the reasons that, like, I loved it so much, even though it had nothing to do with any other Marvel movie coming out, or that has, well,
that we know of.
That we know of, whatever. You know,
stop it.
Is because, you know, this reminded me of my childhood.
That movie was weird for the 80s. So,
yeah.
It is.
Marvel's getting cocky. They're like, oh, we just did Guardians of the Galaxy. Now we're going to do Howard the Duck. What?
Howard the Duck.
And you're going to like it.
Yeah, you're going to pay us all this money. It's going to be the biggest failure and the biggest success of all time.
I think Transformers already has that title.
Oh, man. It is the biggest successful failure of all time.
Yeah. So I just really enjoy... I love thinking... I was trying to figure out why it stuck with me so much, and I felt like that was one of the reasons, because this whole movie, like, it feels like it's smarter than it's supposed to be. Because it's one, like I said, it's one big 80s reference.
But again, I think that's what James Gunn does well. Like, yeah. They picked the perfect director to handle this property.
All right. So there, we got a number of... We usually get like one question an episode from listeners, but
yep.
Apparently tons of people have already seen this movie, and they already had things that they wanted to ask us or have you guys answer. So,
good job, listeners.
Exactly.
Way to go.
Keep it up. If you want to hear your name on the podcast, send us a question when I ask for questions. So I wanted to throw a couple of these listener questions out there to you guys. Wade, who actually has been on the show a couple times, really wanted to know, where do you think the sequel will go? And with a sequel, I think the kind of follow-up question that he was hinting at was, will it be as closely tied to the 80s musical theme that we all obviously saw throughout this?
Is that for me?
Well, it's for either of you.
I would love for Adam Warlock to be a part of it. I don't think that that's going to happen. I would love for Marvel to bring back that character in the comics and in the movies and in every world, because it's one of my favorite characters. But I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think that it's going to be as tied to the 80s music as it was. When we now know that he only has one other tape, and we already played one song off that tape.
Two songs off that tape, I think.
Oh, was it two?
Yeah, because we got the Jackson 5 song and the I Will Survive, Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Okay. All right, so we got two songs off the tape. You know, I don't feel like there's enough music on tapes to really provide us with a full movie worth of 80s music. I do feel like that they'll continue with the trend of, like, funny, humorous, like, keeping it light and keeping it really fun movie to watch. I don't like that I know that you guys are, like, talking over there.
What?
Quietly.
Are we?
I don't like that I know that you're typing away at each other. I'm not a fan.
That's what roommates would do. All right, JR, I think you have some ideas where...
Well, okay, so there've been some potential spoilers for Avengers 2 released, and obviously none of us have seen Avengers 2. It's not even done filming, I don't think, or maybe it is, whatever. But there's it informs where Guardians 2 might go. Are we okay to talk about that?
Yep,
sure.
If you don't want to hear what might happen or might not happen in Avengers 2, since no one's seen it, purely speculation, if you consider that a spoiler...
If you hate even potential spoilers...
Yes. Stop listening and come back in 10 minutes.
Okay, so we already know that Joss Whedon has said that in Avengers 2, he's going to break the team down, right? And so there's speculation that the Hulk is going to end up a villain, sort of, like that he's basically going to go too far or work against the team, or somehow things are going to go really badly involving the Hulk, which is, tends to happen every third issue in the comics.
That's what they're talking about. They're talking about the Hulk movie being World War Hulk, right?
Well, I don't know if they're still going to do a Hulk movie, but the rumor I've heard... So what happened in the comics was Banner hulked out and destroyed Las Vegas, and so there was this group called the Illuminati, which was like Professor X and Namor and Mr. Fantastic and Tony Stark and Doctor Strange. Like, yeah, like the leaders of all the different factions would all meet and discuss things behind the scenes. And so they met, and they were basically like, yeah, Banner can't, like, we just can't keep doing this. And so they shot him into space. They tricked him and fired him off, and they had him set to land on this planet that was uninhabited but able to sustain life, so he could finally just be alone, which is what he always wanted. And so, shockingly, they did it badly, and when he found out he got tricked, he hulked out, broke the ship. It ends up going through this wormhole thing that depowered him because comics, and he crash lands on this planet as the Hulk, and he ends up being forced to be a gladiator in an arena, and there was this whole long storyline called Planet Hulk, and it ended with Hulk becoming the emperor of this planet. Like, he took it over, and he took a wife, and they were going to have a kid, and he had this, like, this ragtag band of ruffians that he had rescued from the arenas and all this kind of stuff. And then, because, again, blah, 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 comic book science, the ship that he came there on somehow made the planet explode, and so he blamed the Illuminati for the whole thing, and so he took this whole army with him back to Earth, and they did this whole event called World War Hulk, where the Hulk basically beat down each member of the Illuminati in each issue, and then at the very end, like, set himself up as the ruler of the Earth, except he was like, I'm just kidding, I wanted to teach you all a lesson, we're cool, right? And then, like, went back to being the Hulk. It was, like, the worst ending to a series that was so awesome I've ever seen.
That was that Greg Pak, or...
I don't remember who it was.
I think it was Greg Pak. Yeah, it's... Yeah. Oh, but part of the planet blowing up is just... children and family were dead.
Oh, yeah, his wife and child died, except then the child didn't die, and now there's a son of Hulk running around.
Whatever. So, for those of us who haven't read the comic, Guardians of the Galaxy.
So they're speculating that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 might basically be Planet Hulk. That the Hulk will get fired off into space at the end of Avengers and somehow run into the Guardians in some way. And so there might be a Planet Hulk film that would lead into a Guardians 2, or that somehow they're all going to end up linked up. I think that'd be great. I think that we won't see the 80s music because thematically in this film, the 80s music was Peter's inability to let go and grow up and move on. And we kind of got, like, that was his character journey in this film, right? So I think that we'll still have the fun, goofiness, we'll still have a killer soundtrack. It just probably won't be all movies from the late 70s and early 80s, would be my guess.
Okay. Well, our second question comes from Cody Triplett, who asks, Rocket Raccoon and Groot versus Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Rocket and Groot every time.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I love Han and Chewie, but...
Groot's a madman.
Well, I feel like this has an obvious follow-up question. And that question is... did Han shoot first, or does Han shoot first?
Han definitely shot first, but Rocket would shoot even more first. Rocket is insane. Like, yeah. Clinically, diagnosably insane.
Crazy man. Yeah. He's a crazy man.
So, even though we have great love for Han and Chewbacca, no chance against Rocket and Groot.
No. I think that even if you're like, well, you know, Han and Rocket may be a bit of a draw, it's like, Groot would destroy Chewie, and my favorite move. Oh yeah, I'll get to that later. We'll continue. I don't want to say that yet.
So what we're all saying is Chewbacca doesn't really bring a whole lot to the table.
No. Oh, he brings a lot to the table.
I don't think so.
He does.
his voice. That's about it.
But not against Groot.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So I think we're all in agreement there.
Okay.
So third question that I actually found I think a partial answer to, but and we've kind of already hinted around this, but Rick Lee James, another guy who's been on the podcast, asked, how did Marvel make such a fun movie from such a bland comic? Which I think we've already answered a little bit. Yeah. And
I love the comic. I don't think it's bland at all.
Well, I think if you've only read the old stuff, you may.
Oh,
sure. If you only read certain stories of the old stuff, I feel like there are some good stories from the, like, from Annihilation on, you know, some good stuff. I don't agree. If you've read Bendis's run, that book hasn't been bland at all.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that kind of. So I guess if you only read the old stuff, or if you only know, kind of, I guess, as a not Guardians of the Galaxy comic reader like I am, all that was told to me was that this was, you know, a bunch of unknowns. It's not even, you know, that popular of a comic. I mean, kind of like we mentioned at the beginning of the show. So when that gets put on the screen, one of the first things I thought was the exact same things that Rick asked in his follow-up question was, do you think it might have been fun because Joss Whedon had some influence on the script?
Sure, but I, you know, in James Gunn, I trust, man. I mean, that dude, like, I'm sure Joss had a hand, but I think James could do this on his own too.
Yeah, and I would say as well to that effect, I feel like the characters are just like funny enough in and of themselves. Like in the comics, Rocket's always been that way. In the comics,
man.
Drax has always been like, just says ridiculous stuff, and you're like, where in the world is this guy from? And Gamora and Star-Lord have always had, like, this really interesting love thing that they've had, and Star-Lord's always been, like, the ladies' man, kind of, where he gets beaten up by all of his girlfriends.
Yeah. So, he's like the ladies' man in his own mind.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, he's not quite as good as Iron Man, but then again, Iron Man has trouble as well. But anyways, you know, all these characters have like a really good space. And Groot, I think, just like the fact that they were able to get away with saying nothing but "I am Groot" the entire movie. And I know in comics it works, but for them to be able to get away with it in the movie, I was like, yes, like that, great job. I know Vin Diesel didn't do a lot, but I felt like for what they asked him to do, he did it pretty well.
Well, what the funny thing there is that my two favorite Vin Diesel movies are ones where he never appears on screen. So, because between this and the Iron Giant,
understandable.
Excellent movies.
Well, Fast Six was a lot of fun.
Well, it was, but I'm talking about my two favorite Vin Diesel.
Okay, fair enough.
This and Iron Giant. I mean, like I said, I love Saving Private Ryan. I thought he's great in Saving Private Ryan. Lots of people forget he was in Saving Private Ryan.
I forgot that until just now. Yeah,
but he's great in it. And you know, Fast Six was fun. Fast Five was fun.
You weren't a fan of Triple X then?
It's more like the original. Anyway, that's not the point. So anyways, I did find this article online that talked about this specific issue, because like I said, we talked about it. There's also been lots of other people who have noticed some of the similarities between the concepts in Firefly and the concepts in Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was actually said that Joss Whedon had some involvement in the writing process for Guardians. Because he said James Gunn worked with him to mold the script. Everyone loved Gunn's original script, except for Joss Whedon. You know, you want to stop there and be like, but it said, Joss Whedon said, or who said he liked it, but that it was too conventional and it needed more James Gunn. So Gunn took another pass and really went for it.
Good for James Gunn, yeah.
Yeah,
nice.
So it's like, did Josh have something to do with it, or Joss had something to do with it? Yes. But really, all Joss did was be like, you know, James Gunn, up your James Gunn script. You know, you know, we want more James Gunn. And I think that showed through the script and really worked. So, but I want to thank the listeners for their feedback. Anytime we put this out, usually the day of, the day before we record a podcast, you know, let us know. We want to talk about your question, typically, no matter how weird it is. But let's see. I would say that moves us into our come on moments. And JR's kind of already hit on some of this. So JR, if there's anything else you want to hit, what just didn't work in this movie that you really, really liked?
Yeah, you know, really, Ronan was it. If I think about all the moments that just didn't work great for me, they were, you know, that first scene where he kills that dude, him sassing Thanos. I wanted those scenes to pop. I wanted them to be better. And like the moment was after he killed the voice of Thanos, and then Nebula says something like, "That's a battle you will lose," and she walks off. It pans in on his face, and he, because of the way the makeup like turns down the corners of his mouth, he looked like the saddest clown ever. And I was like, gosh, that was not supposed, like, I'm not supposed to be like like right now, but I just wanted to be like, cheer up, sad clown, it'll be okay. Like, and I was like, gosh, this guy just does not work for me, you know.
I couldn't get over how much he looked like Brent Spiner.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I know this isn't Brent Spiner because Brent Spiner is much older now, but gosh, he looks like Brent Spiner in this makeup.
Yeah. So yeah, that, I mean, that particular moment, I was like, come on. And just that character in general really did not do it for me.
Gotcha. Griffin?
Yeah, there was some like actual like dialogue script that I didn't enjoy, that I felt like was just too heavy and too obvious. I think the biggest one for me was whenever Gamora's like, "I've lived so long amongst enemies, I'd rather die among friends," and I'm like,
"I love
stop
that
it.
Line.
I hate that line."
I'm like, yeah,
that movie, that line just comes through so many times in movies, like that, something to that effect gets said so many times in movies where it's like a team and they've, you know, they're about to go into battle and they're like, well, who's going to stand with me and I'll die.
They weren't a team. They weren't friends. That was the moment. Well, and then the end of that scene when Rocket's like, all right, we're all standing up. Are we happy?
Yeah.
And then, just a bunch of jackasses. Like, yeah, was just like, a bunch of jackasses. That was perfect.
Yeah.
Well, see, that was great. But I mean, it worked because I was on board with what kind of script it was and kind of where James Gunn was taking the film. So that's what I expected when they got together, or when Gamora finally stood up and said a line like that. So it didn't bother me that much, but at the same time I was like, you know, and this is one of those things where, you know, I can be a Whedon lover or whatever, but I don't think that's what Joss would have done. I don't think it would have been that conventional. I think that's one of those places where, you know, Joss probably was like, this is obviously what people are expecting to happen. Make it better. And he made so many other things in that better. I didn't stop bad.
There are very few things that I was upset about in this movie. Yeah. I mean, I didn't give it, you know, a 9 or a 10, simply not because I felt like it wasn't great. I just felt like I felt like it could have been better. I felt like there were things that like it did really, really well, but I was like, man, it could have been better in some ways. Yeah. And so that was one of them, and you know call me pinching on points. I'm just like, yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's part of the problem we have when we do movies that we really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to find something, you know.
We got to kind of nitpick whenever you're doing so well. We've got to kind of nitpick.
I told Mikey when he asked me to be on with you, I was like, I'm not coming on with that point pincher. Like, it's just not happening. You talked me into it.
And I tried to promise JR that you weren't going to point pinch, but yep.
But here we are. Pinching points.
But let's see. I would agree with both of you guys. I mean, to a certain degree. Oh, man. See, this would be so much better if we were all in the same room.
So he could punch me?
Well, no, just so we could all...
I just took a swing at the mic like I was going to throw it off the table.
There's so many physical reactions that you get when you're in the same room to each other. Just looks or... eye rolls.
So the listeners
like
would
that.
Be even less in on the joke.
Exactly. Like,
we should.
Which is why we're going to talk about it more.
We should do like what's it called? Like we should do like a video one where we're all like looking at one camera and we're all just like yeah. we all looking at different cameras like on our computer or whatever. I like that. Yeah.
The sadness of it.
I would just see with the head down.
But besides pinching points. I would say, like I said, I kind of agree with both of you. I think Ronan was kind of a throwaway bad guy, which I didn't think he needed to be. And if I had to nitpick, I did have some problems with character motivations, especially at the beginning of the film. Like I wasn't on board with what Gamora and Nebula, Karen Gillan's character, like. They're both like, oh, we obviously hate Thanos now, and I'm like, whoa, I thought y'all were obviously on Thanos' side. I think they did backstory for most everyone else pretty straightforward, and I thought those were hard to get on board with. But by the end of the movie, I didn't really care that much. It was a lot of fun. So
well, and that'll be an interesting thing to see once we see Avengers 3 if that changes how we view Guardians 1. Because in the comics, Thanos does not expect his children to like him or to be loyal to him. He's very much a get out for yourself, kill your way to the top. He's just better than everyone else.
Yeah, so he's like not, he's like, if you could take me out, you're allowed to do that.
You should you do just, that. Like, yeah, you should take me out.
But you can't. And that's just where you're at. And that's yeah.
And so if we get that Thanos in
I wish they
Avengers
I hope they put
3,
him across that way.
Yeah. If we get that Thanos in Avengers 3, we might come back and see Guardians and be like, oh yeah, like it totally makes sense that they would be like that and that they would act in these ways. But we certainly don't have that right now.
Yeah, and I hope that they I mean, so far we have no we don't know Thanos at all. We know so little about the character. We feel like he's just like a man behind the sheet. We don't really know what he's supposed to be doing or why he's there.
He's got that creepy smile.
But I think I know. I mean, yeah, they're not going to ruin that. I don't think, and I think they're going to do it well. And if they do it well, I think that people will really get on board with that character because he is so good. Stop it right now. I know what's happening. I'm about to come around that table.
You come around the table. We can't talk from the same side of the table. You can't even see what's going on. It only pops up for a second. So here's another thing we haven't kind of mentioned, but it's part of the things in the script where I think it's kind of read to the audience almost, and that is like Ronan's speech right before he smashes that one guy at the beginning when he's getting armored up, and he's like, "I am giving you exposition.
Exactly.
I am this thing. I'm telling these other people that are here.
There's a treaty that made me mad.
Yeah.
And I want vengeance."
And so there was that part, and then the one where Peter Quill is like, "Wait, who's Ronan?" And the seller, what is the guy's name? The guy with the eyebrows.
The guy with the eyebrows. Yeah, yeah.
So his character, like the reseller, the middleman, whatever.
Yeah. What do they call him? It's sort of the B. The barterer?
The broker?
No.
The broker. Yeah. That's it. So it's the broker. We're not going to be like other podcasts that just go by names. We're going to know what they are. So it's the broker. So he comes around and goes, "You don't know who Ronan is? Well, let me tell you who Ronan is. Ronan is this guy that wants to destroy this. He's a crazed guy. He's crazy. He's so crazy. And he wants to do this. And that's my people. So obviously you're on this planet with my people. And he wants to destroy us all. How convenient you just asked me that. And I'm very passionate about telling you this in great detail. Not just like, who cares? Get out." You know, it's... I'm obviously explaining this to the audience. That was a little annoying, but once again.
But in films like Avengers had a few of those moments. Mm-hmm. In films like this, that's nearly inevitable.
Yeah.
You know.
So
that's very like old school comics too, like Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and so like I said, we're splitting hairs, and since it's hard for us to split these hairs, let's just gush. All right. So JR, just give me your favorite moments in this film.
Griffin can make fun of me if he wants, but that closing scene, the final, the big scene where they all hold hands and like the everything from the dance off, and then when he grabs the stone and like it has to be them all together. I was just like, gosh, I'm such a sap, but that just worked for me, you know? Like, it was so good, and it paid off everything that had come before it so well. I just had a huge, like, dumb, stupid smile on my face through that whole bit, and I got a little weepy-eyed. I knew it was cheesy, and I was kind of like, you're such a dummy for thinking this is great, but I did. I thought it was great.
I mean, I didn't get teary-eyed, but I'm with you. I thought it completely worked.
His line, I mean, it was great. It was so funny and perfect and hilarious.
Oh, when he's like, "I'm distracting you," or whatever?
"I'm distracting you."
No, it's after that. He's like, "You are mortal. How can you do this?" He's like, "You said it yourself. We're the Guardians of the Galaxy." You know, that whole...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you want to add another one? Most people take this opportunity...
Oh man, Rocket. Rocket was the best part of the movie for me. He was my favorite. My wife and I were discussing. Groot was her favorite. Rocket was my favorite. All the moments between Gamora and Star-Lord where he would almost get her, and then she'd flip around on him. You know, when he pulls her in out of space and she wakes up on top of him and she's like, "What happened?" And he goes, "Well, I risked my own life and it was incredibly heroic." And it break, like, because I was like, "Come on, like, you're that what you guys were talking about earlier, right? It broke the cliche." And yeah, she just rolls her eyes and the spell's broken and you're like, gosh, that's so funny. Like, he's so impressed with himself and no one else is.
He is the only one impressed with himself the entire movie.
And Michael Rooker, man. Like, Yondo, you know? Yeah. Fantastic. Loved his character. And yeah, I think my other favorite single moment was when they're running through Ronan's ship and his enforcer sees him again and he goes, "Star-Lord?" And he's like,
"Yes!"
Finally! And they just start, like, yes, killing them all. It was, oh, it was so good.
Finally! Star-Lord! Finally!
So yeah, I mean, I could go on and on and on, but those are some of my favorite beats.
Alright.
Oh, and the Nova Shield.
You like the Nova Shield?
That was cool.
I thought that was cool too. I was like, oh, I've never seen that done before. Nice.
Yeah. And I wanted the Nova Corps, right? I wanted the guys in the helmets and the suits. And you got them, but you didn't get them the way we have Nova. So I don't know.
I was hoping that even just like one really short, like really stocky, like kid looking guy would put on a helmet and walk out to the ship. And that's all the exposition they would give about the Nova Corps, or like about that character. There's a character in comics, for those of you who are like, what is he talking about? Called Nova. He's part of the Nova Corps, and he's like, right now he's like a kid.
Through the Last Starfighter.
Yeah, sure.
But no, it's just like he's a very funny character, a very interesting character, and so there's like a lot more to it than that, and a lot more like iterations of the character that people really like. But I just felt like it would have been good. I mean, my favorite scene was the scene in the hall where where Groot just runs his limb through like all those people and just starts flailing about and won't stop. Like, he's just so excited. He's like a puppy, like a dog. He's like, yes, yes, so much fun. And so I really laughed a lot at that. And honestly, just all of the Rocket Groot stuff. I love that I know for a lot of people they were like, I can't believe they did, like, that was really funny that they did that. But I love that they made Rocket understand what Groot was saying.
Oh yeah.
And that's like, I mean, that's one of my favorite parts of the comics, is that like Groot will say something and Rocket will just be like, yeah, no, if we did that, you know. And I just
I know they're only friends.
Yeah. And I like every time that starts happening, I'm just like, that's why those characters are funny. Mm-hmm. And so I like that. And honestly, I like that they showed you aspects of Groot that you'd never seen in the comics, like the whole light thing. I know that that's really small, but I was like, that's really cool. Like, I like that. I mean, he could do that.
Well, even better when Drax is like, since when can you do that?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the answer is I'm Groot.
I'm Groot, yeah.
I'm pretty sure the answer is I'm Groot. So I just those two characters mainly. I really loved them. I thought that Chris Pratt did a great job, and I was really happy that they cast him, and I felt like it was a perfect casting. I didn't love Batista as the casting, although, like, you know, he did pretty well. Like, I didn't love it, and I don't know. You say, oh, who would you have picked? I don't know.
Did anyone say that?
Somebody asked me who I would have picked.
I've heard that a couple times. When they announced him, I was like, oh. Okay, I mean, he's big enough, but...
Yeah. I don't know. I just didn't like him, per se.
Well, I thought that James Gunn played to Batista's not awesome acting ability.
Yeah, he did really good. He's like, hey, just pretend you're standing on a stage in the middle of a crowd, and you're about to wrestle someone. Say something stupid. Go.
Well, and just like Drax's delivery was wooden, you know, mm-hmm. and kind of terse. So, you know, I could not get over, and I just loved it, how Drax would cackle like a madman anytime things were dangerous. I just thought that was awesome.
Everybody's looking at him like he's crazy.
When Gamora and Peter Quill are like, this guy's got issues. Like, I thought that that was like a nice character moment, you know?
Yeah.
Well, so leading into Drax is one of my favorite moments. Well, I guess a favorite concept. I love the humor of the film because there's so many one-liners. Like, usually when I leave... Well, most of the films I think I've left this year, I would say, you know, there's one, maybe two kind of one-liners that really stick with me. And there are so many in this film. And I love it because I think one of my favorites, like, at first I thought Batista was a really bad casting choice because I thought, I was like, who talks like this? Like, they let this movie go out with him being so laconic, you know? And then it wasn't until, like, he had that line where he's like, nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it. You know? I'm like, yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
And then, like,
well, and then he makes the joke about him being like, he's like, don't call me a thesaurus.
Yes, never call me a thesaurus. Yeah.
And so, like, as soon as he had that line, like, this switch flipped, and I was like,
oh,
I get Drax. And for the rest of the movie,
it was funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah. And now you'll look back on it and be like, oh, all of this is funny.
Yeah,
now.
So then when I would go back and watch it the second time and I see his first that scene where he's getting ready to kill Gamora, I'm like, oh. And he was like,
yeah.
I'm gonna keep your knife. I like, you know, I like your knife.
I like your knife. I'm gonna keep this
knife. Favorite
knife. That was my favorite knife.
You know. So
well, I mean, the finger on the throat bit was just his
stare. Oh my gosh.
Everybody knows that, right? You knew that, right? Yeah.
Everybody knows that. Yeah, it's like really? No. No, I didn't know that.
Why would I put my finger on his throat?
Well, then the way they pay that off at the end of the movie, right? Finger on the throat means death. And then he looks and he's like, metaphor. And he's like, kinda.
Kinda, sure, yeah.
So, I mean, that humor was, like I said, all throughout it, the 80s references. Like, oh my gosh. One of the few times I thought there was a deserved time for the really loud cackling guy behind us to cackle loud was when they crash into to Ronan's ship and Gamora just looks at Star-Lord and says, we're just like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Amazing.
That was a laugh out loud. Like, I could not believe, like, someone sat down and wrote that dialogue and said, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It reminds me.
Because she was so sincere when she delivered the line.
Oh, her all credit goes to her, man.
Yeah.
Like, she owned that line. Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah. So I like how they turned. Yeah, I did love that whole Kevin Bacon thing. It was good.
Did you see the tweet from Kevin Bacon afterwards? He saw it and he was like, you know, this is great and da 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 da. There's a whole page of people, like John Stamos tweeted after he saw the movie and he's like, you know, I'm a bad man, you know, stuff like that.
I'm a bad man.
Yeah, so, I mean, just all the, you know, it's that's all great. So, like, on one hand, you had the humor, but like Griffin pointed out, there was a whole bunch of sadness in this movie, but it never dwelt on the sadness, which made it surprising that. Apparently, like JR has already admitted to, there were some scenes that really kind of could choke you up, which I think is really hard when you don't dwell on the deep stuff. There's that scene where Rocket was obviously, you know, he was coming to terms with the, you know, he obviously had his gruff demeanor that was kind of obviously a mask for how he was torturing himself for who he was,
right,
and how he was weird and stuff like that. And I thought that was great, but I think one of the coolest things was when Peter Quill is reading the letter from his mom finally at the end of the movie, and in the letter, like, she goes, you know, my Star-Lord, and you realize why he calls himself Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And like when you know that happened, I was like, oh my gosh, I never really thought about why he was called Star-Lord, and I got goosebumps. And, you know, so we've been focusing on, like, the Walkman to be a callback, but we realized that, you know, it wasn't just the, you know, this really did shape him. His relationship with his mother was super huge.
Yeah. Well, JR, do you think that they'll, I mean, they alluded to his father in this one. I mean, what iteration of his dad do you think we're going to see?
I don't know.
Do you think we'll see one at all?
Oh, I think we have. I mean.
Yeah, we have to. If all,
you know, and maybe they don't do a Planet Hulk thing, you know? Maybe Guardians 2 is about, what is it? Isn't it Jason Quill?
Yeah.
Isn't that his...
Jason is his J-dash.
Yeah. Like Jor-El, but in the Marvel universe. Yeah. You know, I don't know if he'll be Spartax. I don't know what they're thinking with what Nova Prime described it as like, you know, it's ancient and we've never seen it around here before.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, you got that. And then, I mean, you have like him being called Star-Lord and the mom calls him that. But does she call him that because he is that to the Spartax? Or does she call him that because that's her nickname for him? Because like he's from the stars. I don't.
Both.
Yeah, it's a very, it's like, there was a lot of stuff there that I was like, huh, I wonder what they're going to do with. So I'm interested, and I'm really excited about the next one, you know, already, you know, years and years away from that, which made me think about the fact we have to wait like 8-9 months. Is it 9 months or 9 months?
For Avengers.
Yeah. It's going to be a long, we've not had to wait that long for a Marvel movie in a while. Yeah. So,
you know what? The, I forgot my other, my other come on moment was right as Yondu and his crew were flying away. And the guy's like, yep, sure glad we didn't deliver him to his dad like we were supposed to. Like, I was like, yeah, I got your clues, man. Like, you did such a good job. And I thought, man, they're not going to come right out and say it. Like, they gave us all the clues we needed to figure out
that you would dad is the one.
And, I mean, again, I know that that means that not everyone would have figured it out. Whatever. Yeah. But, like, I thought they were going to respect our intelligence.
No.
And then they didn't. And I was like, come on.
That seems kind of like a producer move. I mean, it's probably, you know, a decision they obviously made.
Or, yeah, like a Kevin Feige is like, no, like, come on.
Say it. Just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people won't get it. Just do it.
Well, and I want to
there are going to be some Transformer fans in the audience. just do it. Just put it out there. Jeez. Well,
we don't technically have to wait 9 months for the next Marvel film. Because we get Big Hero 6.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's not going to be tied in, though, is it?
No, not to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it is a Marvel film.
Made by who?
Disney.
Eh, doesn't count.
But it's a Marvel.
I mean, technically, it's
an odd property.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay, so we do have wait for a while.
I'm talking about like phase two, next one.
Yeah, we do have to wait a while.
It feels going to feel like an eternity.
Okay, so I want to leave this one image/question with you for kicking off final thoughts. All right, I saw this really great meme on the internet a day or two ago, and it said that uncomfortable moment when you realize that Rocket does more than Superman does to protect civilians.
Yep.
More Men of Steel trashing. This is your chance.
This is it? All right. Let me limber up a little bit.
Honestly, that was one of that. I love that people were still harping on this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more that I find myself removed from the movie, the more I like what they did.
Watch it again; it'll fix it.
I know. I'm just gonna love it, and you know, I feel like once again, I think that I love the fact that it wasn't dark. It didn't need to be. It, you know, he didn't need to like set up like this huge, you know, dark story, even though they do all really have sad backgrounds.
We're talking about Guardians.
Guardians.
Yeah,
it could have been super dark, and it wasn't, yep. And I appreciated that. I appreciate that it didn't feel a need to tie into something that it wasn't tied into, because it had no reason to be tied into anything Marvel has done already. It didn't have any of the characters. They weren't anywhere near Earth. They wouldn't have even heard about what was going on Earth. Why would they care? So I think for them just to go on about their merry way and do their own thing was great. And I felt like as much as the script for me did things that I didn't like, it was perfect for the movie, and I felt like it really fit the characters well and introduced everyone in a really quick, really succinct way that I was like, man, that was awesome. And I liked that it got the rules of the superheroes in the Marvel Universe of them being hurt, like people who have a lot of backstory, who have a lot of problems, who have a lot of issues. I've said this before on the podcast that Marvel is a lot of people with issues trying to be better, and DC is a lot of people that are, for the most part, pretty much perfect, trying to be kind of normal. You know, when you talk about like Wonder Woman and then, you know, these characters that don't really have a backstory that screams issues, they got that right so well, and then like gave them a motivation to protect and serve and love people that they had no way of knowing. So whenever you talk about Rocket basically like being like, I'm just gonna turn my ship up and just fire whenever I kind of want to join the fight that they're all in. Like, I, you know, Rocket wants to get up there and shoot his guns. He wants to pull out his own guns and do it. But he's like, you know, I'm going to sit down here and I'm going to do what I can to protect and serve and really care for this world that I don't even live on. That they have no vested interest in that world. Why do they care? But they're heroes, and that's what they're supposed to do. So I like that. They got that right. So overall, I'm gonna bump it up a grade on IMDb. That's what overall this conversation is gained it a point.
All right, JR, final thoughts.
You know, this is another great film, and like Griffin said, it shows that Marvel knows what they're doing. It's thematically rich. It's not necessarily breaking any new ground, but it does what a blockbuster needs to do to work, Transformers, which is actually have a point, you know, and actually be telling a human story, despite the fact that only one of the characters is human, you know. And so I thought it was fantastic. Marvel Phase 2 was at least as big a gamble as Marvel Phase 1, but in a totally different way, because it had to see if films could survive a post-Avengers universe. And every single one of them has proven that, yeah, they can. So I think they got the right guy at the helm. I think the casting was, yeah, almost entirely spot on, you know, with maybe one or two small missteps. So I can't wait to see what's next. I'll be first in line to buy a ticket.
All right. Well, I have enjoyed this. I think I've learned a lot about comics that I didn't know about before and how they tied into this movie. Thanks to both of you gentlemen for expanding on that. And if you want to have more conversations with the comic gurus known as Griffin and JR, individually, separately, whatever, together, roommates, I don't know. How can people get a hold of you, JR?
Yeah, I'm all over the interwebs. So you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/JR Forresteros. There are Twitter as well, JR Forresteros. Last name is F as in Frank, O-R-A-S-T-E-R-O-S, Forresteros. And then I have a couple of podcasts, Storymen, which is with two other guys that are authors. We talk about pop culture, history, and theology. We're on our season 3 break right now, so we're going to be coming back in a couple weeks, starting season 4, once we all get back from our travels and Matt finishes up the book he's writing and all that kind of stuff. And then I have another podcast I just started called Origami Elephants, with a co-host named Bren Lewis, and we talk about religion and philosophy through the most inflammatory topics we can find. So It's a lot of fun, and both of those podcasts, you can find them at my website, jrforesteros.com, or origamielephants.com, storymen.us, all those places. So,
awesome. Griffin?
Yeah. Twitter? Instagram, Facebook? All these things. Griffin_Kale on Twitter, and I think Instagram is like GAKale maybe. I'm not even sure.
Don't follow him on Instagram.
Don't follow me on Instagram. I don't post enough stuff, so it doesn't really matter. Facebook is pretty self-explanatory. Website griffinkale.com that will be updated soon. As soon as all of the artwork that I commissioned comes back, as soon as that happens, we will be back on track. But right now, I'm waiting patiently on artists, which they're traditionally slow. So
they're meticulous,
and I appreciate that because I love them for it. So all that being said, if you have questions, comments, concerns, neutral or above, please. But I'll take them all. At those various sites. So.
And we'll have all these notes in the show notes, all these links, some of the stuff that JR had mentioned earlier. I have some, you know, Easter eggs from Guardians, Easter eggs from Marvel, the Infinity Stone breakdown, all that stuff. All these links will be in the show notes, which you can find at realworldtheology.com. You can follow Real World Theology at Real World Theo on Twitter, or you can follow me at Physification. You get lots of the same stuff generally, a little more with Physification, lots of show stuff with Real World Theo, but you can connect with us there. You can connect with us on our Facebook page. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. If you enjoy it, I would, yes, on Stitcher for JR. So thanks, JR, for making me do that. So if you enjoy the show, I really highly encourage you to review the show on iTunes. The more reviews we get, it just bumps our rankings. More people can find the show. Most people think the show isn't dumb, and I don't think the show is dumb. very modest about the show. But anyway, I want more people to find it. I want more people to get involved in the conversation. I love meeting new people, having better conversations, having cool guests on who love to talk about movies and who are passionate about talking about themes.
Y'all need to know Griffin and I are super expensive. So the more you rate, the more he will be able to afford quality guests like us.
That's right.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm moving to Dayton now, right? Is that what's happening?
that's moving expenses.
I got a new roommate, so
yeah. So I mean, you know, it's a labor of love, and I hope that out there you guys appreciate it. And like I said, you're getting something from it. So, like I said, review it. Let us know what you like. I don't care if you don't like anything. Just let us know what you like.
Yeah, neutral or above, please.
Five-star reviews.
Yeah, neutral or above would be great.
But like I said, again, I just want to thank my guests for being here. I mean, I know you're expensive, but you're worth every penny, both of you.
Yeah, well.
Oh, well, my rate doubles next time. So
yeah. I do it for the love and for the, you know, the check, obviously.
And for the cash.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thanks, listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. And until next episode... remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
Say mommy.
Just sneaking that one in there.
This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.
If I wasn't gonna say anything, then Griffin did, and I was like, I don't want to be left out.
Actually, I usually wait for everyone to say something.
JR, jeez.
But sometimes
people
don't.
Your sweet time.
So
sorry.
It's completely apathetic. It's, you know.